Our guest on this episode of Metanoia is Jeff O'Keefe, who's the executive director of Zen Peacemakers. It's an international organization that promotes peace and connective social engagement. Welcome. Welcome to our program. It's glad to have you here, and I'm excited for you being with us today.
Nice to meet you, Junius. Thanks for inviting me. I'm glad to be here as well. So,
tell us a little bit about yourself personally. Share your experiences, what led you down this path, this quest, and then share some information about your organization.
Sure, I'm happy to. What's most important? What's most important is I'm a father of three kids who are in their late 30s and one into his early 40s. My middle daughter will turn 40 here in about a month. So, and I've got three grandkids, but they're spread all over the country. I live in the mountains in Colorado, outside of Boulder, Colorado, and they're in the Bay Area, Massachusetts, and elsewhere. I spent my original career in the outdoor industry. I was a executive for outdoor companies, and by outdoor, what we're talking about is hiking, mm-hmm. climbing, backpacking, that sort of thing. But I've been a Zen student since 1974, and I've practiced in different locations, but fairly consistently within one lineage. And maybe I'll say a little bit about that in a second. But so that's really been a consistent backdrop of my life, or foundation, perhaps I should say, for 50 years. A little over 4 years ago, I had left my commercial employment. I'd been a consultant for 4 or 5 years, and I got a call to interview for the job of executive director of Zen Peacemakers. I was aware of Zen Peacemakers because I knew the founder, not well, but I met him a couple of times. I've been on, I had served on nonprofit board of directors before, but I'd never been in a leadership role in a nonprofit. I'd been president of, half a dozen commercial organizations, but never of a nonprofit. But I had a real tenderness towards the mission of Zen Peacemakers. And long story short, in February of 2020, I took the position, and I've been here since. Zen Peacemakers, and I'll keep this somewhat brief, as the name, of course, would imply, came out of the Zen Buddhist tradition. And without going into a history lesson here, Zen Buddhism came here, from Japan or China or Korea or Vietnam, in the last century. And you could talk about, different dates about when that occurred. But in the Japanese lineages, there were several primary, points of entry, you might say, with a Japanese teacher who came here and founded a center. One of them was Zen Center of Los Angeles. And the first successor of the founder of Zen Center of Los Angeles, name was Bernie Glassman. And he and his wife at the time, Jishu Holmes, were the founders of Zen Peacemakers. We could talk for a long time about that, the origin story, but generally, Bernie had been a very dedicated, traditional, committed monastic. And he had a profound personal experience of all of the suffering in the world, what we might refer to as the hungry ghosts of those who have been left behind, those who have not been invited to the dinner table.
Mm-hmm.
And not as a repudiation of his monastic practice or his Zen practice, but as an extension of it, he vowed to spend the rest of his life working to bring attention and awareness and love to the places in the world that need it the most. So Bernie Glassman, you know, vowed to, you know, to address this human condition that is not new. It's been with us forever, and did a number of things early on. A pivotal event was what we call a street retreat that he did in Washington, D.C. Street retreat is, you know, where we go onto the streets of a city with no money, no identification, no cell phone, no sleeping bag, no tent, no nothing, and live on the streets for part of a week. A lot of this origin story can be found in a book called Bearing Witness. I recommend it to everybody. It's a, you know, it's a great read. One of the first big events that Zen Peacemakers did was 27 years ago. We did a Bearing Witness retreat at Auschwitz-Birkenau in Poland. And you know, it attracted over 100 people. And Bernie's idea of that was not for a bunch of Western, you know, spiritual liberals to go and feel badly at a death camp, but to profoundly confront the horror of genocide, and to do so with a mixture of people that included survivors' families, perpetrators, you know, guards at the camps, mm-hmm. Families of Nazis, etc., and to really create a bit of an emotional cauldron where change can occur. We've been doing that now for 27 years, in that time as well, Bernie moved from Los Angeles back to New York City, where he grew up, and in Yonkers founded a bakery called Grayston Bakery. It's still there today. And the intention of the bakery, Yonkers was poor at the time, and just really left behind, you know, people with mental health issues, drug mm-hmm, issues, mm-hmm. you know, criminal backgrounds and so forth, and no opportunities, no jobs. So his intention was, let's start a business and employ people who the world ignores, give them a place to work and learn a skill. So they did that, soon realized people didn't have a place to live. Let's start a construction company and renovate some of these, you know, derelict apartments around the neighborhood, so people have a place to live. So people learn carpentry and electrical and probably some air conditioning units. You know, they realized that, you know, women had a hard time coming to work because they had to take care of kids and there was no daycare. And if there was daycare, people couldn't afford it. So they started a daycare, and on and on and on and on. And Zen Peacemakers is no longer associated with Grayston. And not because, you know, there was any rift or anything. It's just, you know, things changed and a dedicated group of people took over Grayston. But I'll tell you, to this day, they make brownies. They make brownies for Ben and Jerry's and, you know.
Right.
I highly recommend them. They're delicious. But their mission is not to make brownies. Their mission is to hire people who are unhirable otherwise. So they have a radical hiring approach, which
model,
is
model, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So anyway, that's Grayston. But Zen Peacemakers, you know, moved forward and continued to do other Bearing Witness retreats at places of tremendous suffering and horror or genocide in the world. We just a few years ago, we started a new one, Bearing Witness to Racism in America. And we go to Selma and Montgomery for a week every year. And now we've done that five times, I think. We've been for 10 or 15 years, we've been going up into the Black Hills in South Dakota and working with a group of Lakota elders who we've gotten to know pretty well. And that retreat begins here in about a little over two weeks. And we've got 40 people attending up there. We've done Bearing Witness retreats in Rwanda, Belfast, and elsewhere. So we are, and I'll try to keep this, I'll end this here in a second. We are, as was said, we are international. We're in about 25 or 30 countries. We've got about 6,000 members around the world. And we do a tremendous amount of online programming around the various topics that are of interest to Zen peacemakers.
In addition to your online topics and using the technology, you also do training. So tell us about your trainings and what do they focus on? Because what you've explained, I would use the word reconciliation, where you go to these places of horrific suffering and you try to bring participants together to raise the consciousness and the energy surrounding them and the places. So what type of trainings do you offer?
Yeah, and let me get to that in just a second, because I want to expand on what you just said a bit as a basis. And earlier I started to mention, we come from the Zen Buddhist tradition, but we are not strictly that at all. We're not strictly Buddhist at all. We're very much inclusive. We've got Catholics and Jewish people and Sufis and, Hindus and people who are completely unaffiliated with any spiritual path whatsoever. So, but all of the work that we do is based on, and it's a notion that we refer to as the three tenets. And the three tenets are, very simply put, not knowing, which is that silent, still, restful state of mind without any opinions or judgments or ideas or preferences or aversions, not knowing. Bearing witness, which very simply put means whether what's in front of us is beautiful or horrible, ugly or, wonderful, whatever it is, whatever the world shows us, we look and we don't turn away. We don't necessarily have an agenda for what we're going to do other than to bear witness and not turn away. And then the third one is taking loving action from the basis of not knowing and bearing witness. And that could be any number of things. It could be to do nothing, frankly. It's whatever comes up out of your heart. And people end up in Zen peacemakers. People do end up. We've got people working with prisoners, with refugees, with homelessness, with food insecurity, with gender issues, with war and peace. We just finished a program the other day on Ukraine that we've repeated since the war started a year and a half ago. We are meeting regularly about Gaza and Palestine since October 7th, and those kinds of activities. So there's quite a lot of activity that's going on. To answer your question about training, we have a few levels of training. We have kind of one-off single session or multiple session trainings on a particular topic. Right. And we have a lot of teachers in our community. We have a series we call core trainings. And we do one a month. There are four of them, and then we repeat. And one of them is, and they're very basic. They're 1 hour, they're free to everybody, no prerequisite. Anybody can come. One of them is on meditation. One of them is on the three tenets that I just talked about. Mm-hmm. One of them is on counsel practice, which if you're familiar, then I don't need to say much about that, but I can later if you'd like me to talk about counsel. And the fourth one is on, you know, the somewhat unique approach to peacemaking that is Zen peacemakers. So that's the core trainings. And that's really intended to be accessible to a lot of people easily. And then, a step beyond that, we have a 2-year training program in Zen peacemaker approach to all of this. And this is by application. It's a commitment, to be sure. In 2 years, there are 8 or 9 modules of 4 meetings apiece on 9 different topical areas, and we go much deeper, and it's very, very participatory. So we just created that about 3-4 years ago in that formal sort of a way. And we have graduated, if you want to use the term, 2 cohorts of students so far, totaling about maybe 65 or 70 students. And our third cohort is well underway right now. In fact, I'm one of the teachers. So I'm in the middle of teaching my module right now. And we've got 39 students in that one. So those are the various levels of what we do with. Mm-hmm. I hope that answers your question.
Mm-hmm. Now, many people, like you said, the Zen comes from a Buddhist tradition. My understanding is that your organization and even Zen itself is non-dogmatic and it's not doctrinal. And it addresses the teachings of the Buddha, who addressed human suffering. There is so much human suffering, pain and dysfunction in the world, collectively and personally. And you just talked about meditation. So how important, in your mind, is meditation in addressing some of these issues and helping us navigate life amidst all this suffering?
That's a really good question. And our mission, and I won't get the words exactly right, but our mission includes that. Our mission is engaged social action based in contemplation. We use the word contemplation because it sounds less Asian, Father Thomas Keating, was a great teacher and proponent of Christian contemplation. So we really want to be inclusive of all of those various traditions. But you ask a great question. I don't know that we believe anything, but we practice that a basis in contemplation or meditation of some sort is really essential. It's really essential. I think it's a bit of a challenge to explain. I could hear someone who might have a cynical reaction to that saying, well, what does that do for the world if you're sitting on your cushion in your living room quietly for 30 minutes a day? What's that doing for anybody else other than yourself? And if someone asked me that question, I would probably tell them, well, try it and see for yourself. But more conversationally, I think the answer to that is the more I can quiet down and not be on the end of the leash of this complexity making machine up here. And that's its job. Its job is to secrete thoughts.
Right, right. And filter and stimuli.
And it's relentless. It's relentless. And it's not a problem, in and of itself. It's not a problem. It's just what it does. It's no more of a problem than that my heart beats. But this one tends to get in the way because, it encourages me to cling to this and push that away. to have a judgment about those guys and to prefer this situation, to hate the weather today and love it tomorrow. All of that stuff really gets in the way of me being able to hear my heart and see that suffering in the world, and to you know, be able to listen to it, and to perhaps be able to do something useful. So that's the function of meditation or contemplation in this process. And so the answer to that person's question that I made up the question, but you know, really is, it's subtle, it's mysterious, it's incremental. You don't see it happening, but you know, the subtle changes in us personally rub off on other people and the way we interact in the world, and very subtly it creates peace.
Well, one of the things that I know, and I'm sure that your organization is aware of, is that we're conditioned to be outer directed, and what you're doing is encouraging contemplation. It's the quote, I forgot who said it, the unexamined life is not worth living. Yeah. So you're encouraging people to go within, get quiet, and listen to another source or experience the peace that is there, and then it'll help you filter out the various cacophony of ideas, thoughts, and images that come through. And it gives you a better perspective, and it gives you a more centered way of living. And then I like the fact that your organization blends that with, you know, just watching, observing what's going on non-judgmentally. And then if moved, you're given the guidance to do something about it, to take some kind of action.
That's very well said, Junius. I really appreciate that. You know, one of the things, you know, and I'm sure you've experienced this, you're aware of this, as so many people are, but before we engage in a practice like that, we have something happens in the world. I'm driving down 28th Street. A guy cuts me off in traffic. And before I even think, I honk the horn and I flip him off. and then maybe it escalates beyond that.
Right.
The guy gets out of his car and I get the tire iron and we're off to the races. And I think there is a belief that, well, the guy made me do that. I didn't have a choice. He made me do that. And when we engage in this practice, we get to see that in fact, there's a little bit of a space in there in between the guy cutting me off and my reaction. And it's not to judge my reaction. I mean, who knows? Maybe some reaction is the right thing to do. But we rarely experience that we have that choice.
Right.
And the more we can be still, the more that space expands. And that's the beginning of peacemaking, I think. This is just my opinion. I'm not an expert, but that's my opinion. And we look at what happens in the world, and so much of it, so much of the conflict, it is really based on that kind of instant reaction, you know, that
Now, let me ask you this. Is within your contemplative process, is there an element of discipline? Does that promote discipline? In other words, just like the example that you gave, just waiting that fraction of a second before you respond, as opposed to a knee-jerk reaction that could have escalated and just gone totally off the rails. How does this contemplative process, this practice, this consistent process, enable you to make better decisions? And does that ultimately make your life more disciplined? It's not necessarily going to make you immune from challenges, but does it offer you a discipline to help you navigate these various situations?
It's interesting you use that word. It's probably not a word I would use, but it makes me think. It offers something like a discipline. It offers choice and the spaciousness to choose to engage in the world based on commitments to being more compassionate. Yeah, and not as an idea, not as an idea that I'm holding. Here's what compassionate looks like.
I'm
going to act that way. But as something that comes up out of our bodies, for as much, and I don't want to go off into a whole long thing about Zen, but for as much as it Zen kind of bubbles up in the popular realm as it does, or if it does, I think there's the assumption that it's very heady. It's big ideas and it's a philosophy and it's all this stuff. In fact, it's the absence of all of that stuff. It's a completely somatic practice. So to answer your question, if I'm just resting in a space of feeling my belly go up and down when I breathe, and am comfortable being there and can stay there by intention, then a lot of this stuff that comes up can go by, and I can see it more clearly, and I can have a better reaction. On a really, really intimate level, in our primary relationships, if we're with a partner, if we're married, or long-term committed relationship, or even our friends or our family, there's no better practice ground for this. and I can tell you, and we all know the landscape, we all know the territory where we can say something to our partner or our parent or one of our kids that we know is going to push their buttons, and they know the stuff that's going to push my buttons. And again, then we're off to the races. It's a great place to practice this.
Our guest is Jeff Sean O'Keefe. He's the executive director of Zen Peacemakers. And we're pleased to have him with us on our program today. Metanoia means to change your mind or transform your mind. And we tend to focus on people who are offering ideas and practices for transformation, because in our view, the world needs transformation toward the positive. So give us some background on how folks can find out more about your organization. How can they enroll in the classes? I signed up for your newsletter, and it literally came in email right before we came on the air. So you talk about synchronicity. So give us your website at URL and some more information about the organization. When do you have any upcoming trainings or retreats or any other events?
Yeah, thanks, Junius. And thanks for signing up for the newsletter. And anybody watching or listening, I would recommend to do that. You can go to zenpeacemakers.org, zenpeacemakers with an S, .org, and sign up for the newsletter. It's free. We put it out once a week. And it's primarily about our activities, the events that are coming up. Occasionally we include some other content, that's a good thing to do. You can become a member of Zen Peacemakers. Most everything we do is free. Our membership is free. Of course we love people to donate, and that's always an option, but the door is wide open to everybody, to be a member. We have, and I won't run through a calendar with you. Suffice to say, every week of the year, we have a number of online programs going on. The newsletter is the best way to find out about those. They can be in a few different types. One of them is, we call a Peacemaker Circle. And by the way, they're all free. Peacemaker Circle is a 90-minute program where usually I'm the host and we have a guest who comes and talks about a particular topic. In fact, on Thursday, Helen Tworkoff, who was one of the founding editors, she was the founding editor of Tricycle Magazine, the first and probably most prominent Buddhist magazine in the United States. She'll be my guest on Thursday at noon U.S. Eastern time, and people can register for that on the website. Again, it's free. So pretty much every week we have at least one of those. We shoot for one a week. We offer, I'm going to talk about council last, but the core trainings that I referred to, once a month we have those. We offer council practice pretty much every week. And some of them are open to anyone. We have one that's particularly for mental health workers.
Mm-hmm.
We have one that's for women only, and a few other formats like that. And I won't say too much about this, but it's such an important part of what we do. I want to just take a minute or two on council. Council practice, I understand, I've been told, originally came out of Native American practice, and has probably been done in some form with human beings for thousands of years, I suppose. You know, it's traditionally sitting in a circle around a fire, talking. Council has gotten a little more specific, and we do this in small groups. We come together. We always remind ourselves the guidelines of, we're speaking from the heart. We're not telling elaborate stories or ranting about, you know, politics or the report or something.
Proselytizing or things like that.
Yeah. And, you know, and what's coming up kind of non-intellectually, we listen fully when we're not speaking. We're confidential. Everything stays, nothing, you know, everything, what comes up
right,
in council
right,
stays
right.
There. We're spontaneous, which is really a challenge for some people. But when it comes to be your turn, you know, the image really is you're standing at the threshold and you don't have a notion of what you're going to say before you step across into the room, which can be a beautiful, beautiful practice. And this is open to everyone as well. And, you know, in a way, Junius, it's a bit like meditation, as we were talking about, but it's doing this as a group where we are in the stillness of listening and bearing witness to one another, really. We are allowing whatever comes up to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And to not turn away from it. Mm-hmm. And it might be beautiful, it might be sad, it might be ugly, and somebody might be really angry. Could be any number of things. And we commit to stay there with each other. So those are occurring on a regular basis. And you don't have to be a member of Zen Peacemakers to take part in any of those. And then finally, I mentioned earlier, our in-person bearing witness retreats. And these are fee-based because they're expensive to put on and there's travel and all, you know, all kinds of things involved. But right now we're doing three a year and perhaps a fourth one. We did, as I mentioned to you earlier, we just finished bearing witness to racism in America in Selma and Montgomery. And we had a great group down there. And that'll come up again next April. In about 2.5 weeks, we are doing a Native American bearing witness retreat in the Black Hills of South Dakota. We've got 7 Lakota elders who will be there talking to us and doing ceremony and singing and praying and sharing about Lakota experience, which is, again, another one of genocide. Middle to late November, we will be at Auschwitz-Birkenau again. And the dates are on the website. You can look them up there. And we'll be there for a week. We begin on a Sunday evening and then go out to the camps and stay there for 5 days, come back some Saturday morning. And that has been a profound transformational experience for hundreds and hundreds of people. Mm-hmm. And I would encourage anybody who's listening to us today to consider one of those retreats. So, yeah, that's.
I have a question. Because of your meditation and contemplation, time stands still, things stop, and you generally are in a calm, peaceful place, generally. So how do you reconcile that peace and that quiet and that patience with the seemingly urgent need to address so much pain, suffering, and war in the world? How does that help you deal with that and navigate that? Because that is a benefit, because you can get burned out just because we're inundated with so much negativity in the media.
So yeah, that's right.
How does that help just deal with that?
Interesting. Just a word on the way you asked the question. I don't want to get across the notion that when we're doing, and I can only speak to Zen meditation, so, but perhaps other kinds of contemplation as well, but that when we're doing that, everything stops and everything's quiet and peaceful. This complexity is still doing its job.
Right, right.
We just had a Zen retreat last weekend, and, you know, I'm a teacher, and so students come and talk to me one-on-one, and most everybody shares that throughout the course of the retreat, they have times when they are calm. They have times when they're agitated, or they can't, you know, their thoughts are just spinning. So, you know, we're not leaving the world when we do that.
It's right.
And we're still aware of our thoughts. We're aware of our breath. We're aware of the birds chirping or the temperature in the room or whatever it might be. So how does that help? Well, one thing is, we don't sit in meditation all day long.
Right.
So, a point comes where you finish and you get up and you go do something. And so, you know, that's where we have the choice of what is it that we're going to do. And the spaciousness that can result from meditation allows me to not have to have this guy be the center of the universe. You know what I mean? My greedy and angry and ignorant tendencies are never going to completely go away. Part of our nature.
We're not going to be evolved masters, I don't think.
Yeah. But I can get to a point where I can see that and sort of watch the tendency over there and not necessarily have to act on it. So when I do get up and go do something, I have the ability, or we all have the ability, to choose and then to carry out acting in a more compassionate way. Mm. And that might be, you know, getting on a plane and going to Gaza and helping feed people, something grand and big like that. It might simply be when I go to the food market later today, it might simply be just, you know, looking in the eyes of the checker and saying, "Thank you. I hope you have a good day." You know, all of the opportunities don't have to be big sweeping ones, and they can be surprising in their simplicity. So I hope that answers a little bit.
Right. Now, you've used the word compassion several times, and I think that's important, and it's important people grasp that, because there is an apathy and a isolation, because so many people now are caught up in these ideological silos, or they're afraid. The news is so bad, and people are now taking on the negativity that this process is generating. And so how important is compassion on a day-to-day, just like you just mentioned, just once you move about your daily activities, how important is compassion?
It's primary, it's essential. Not just in Zen practice, but you know, in our lives, really in our lives. It's always a little bit tricky to talk about this, but you know, the experience of interconnectedness, being able to experience interconnectedness, is available to all of us. And it doesn't necessarily have to come about through Zen or Buddhist practice. And, this has happened to people since time immemorial. And by interconnectedness, I don't mean a Hallmark greeting card sort of thought. I don't mean a thought at all. I mean literally experiencing that you and I, and you know, the trees outside my house and everything are one. And I realize that, you know, that might sound a little new age, but this is foundational, in Zen practice. You know, that's part of it. You know, that we are one, and we are connected, and at the same time, we are diverse and individual, and third, that there's a harmony between the two of those. They coexist at the same time. So by way of answering your question, compassion is really the only reaction to that experience of interconnectedness. You know, we always, this is an overused analogy, but you know, we use this analogy a lot in teaching, but if I cut my hand, this hand's not going to say, well, that doesn't really affect me. This hand is going to go get a bandage and do something. So if you expand that to humanity or the planet Earth or the universe in terms of being connected, then compassion really is, you know, how can I not notice? How can I look and not turn away? How could I look and turn away? I can't. How can I be still, bear witness, and then not do something to help? And you know, those opportunities again are endless. And the compassion takes us out of, you know, not out of ourselves, but it takes the focus off of ourselves to everyone else. But at the same time, it has to include ourselves. And you mentioned burnout. So, you know, compassion for myself is to make sure that if I'm starting to feel that, if I'm starting to kind of get frayed around the edges a little bit, that I step back and rest, you know, that I rest. Mm-hmm. And recharge. Yeah,
right.
That's compassion.
That is one of the benefits of what this contemplative process. It allows you to re-energize yourself, get away. You know, the Christian tradition, where You know, Yeshua tells his disciples, come away with, just move away from the crowd, move away from all of this going, just come together and just be quiet. And I think that is the core solution or way to address living. At some point, not just sleeping, because sleeping is a great re-energizer and recharger, and you get messages in your sleep, but in your waking times, there's times that you have to come away, and as you well know, just get away. So share your URL again. Tell folks, remind folks how they can get your newsletters. All this is free. And then as we close out, share something about Zen Peacemakers that we haven't covered already that you feel is critically important for our viewers to know.
Our website is zenpeacemakers.org. And we put a lot of information into the website. So it's really quite rich. Not only is there information about our activities, there's a full calendar of all the events. We record all of our online events. So there is an enormous library of videos of past Peacemaker circles. We don't record council for obvious reasons.
Right.
But the Peacemaker circles, and we've had a wonderful, wonderful array of guests over the last few years. So I would encourage people to look at the media library and scan through if you find something of interest. Sign up for the newsletter, and you can do that at the bottom of the homepage. And there's also, if you want to become a member, we'd love to have you. There's a button to click there. Also on the homepage, there's a short video that we did. It's about 1 minute long that kind of gives a feeling for Zen Peacemakers. Share something we haven't talked about.
Well, the other thing before, let me interrupt you there. There's a donate button, so people can choose to make a donation clicking that button. Is that correct?
That is correct. Thank you for adding that, Junius. I appreciate that so much. Again, we've been around 30 plus years, probably 30 years somewhat formally and longer. And there are within the community, so this is something I haven't mentioned before, but within the community, there are dozens, if not hundreds of people who have been with Zen Peacemakers the whole time. We're getting a little long in the tooth. There's a lot of gray hair when we get online together or get together. One of the most wonderful things are these people and the relationships that have developed over the years, and how close people are and how much they trust one another. It truly is extraordinary. And it's not just a matter of the veterans who have been here for three decades. With the three cohorts of students that I mentioned, all of whom are newer, this is happening with them too. And the first and second cohort have been finished now for a while. They still get together. They still come in to help us with our cohort three classes and with planning events and so forth around those classes. So there really is community. There really is this harmonious, I would have to say, mostly harmonious community. Mm-hmm. So it's a lovely aspect of it.
Okay, well, we thank you for, number one, I thank you for your prompt response to my query about being a guest here. I thank you for what you're doing, and you certainly more than welcome to come back. Like I said, this is what we're about, Metanoia, about promoting growth and transformation. So obviously, you're a resource for us here. So you're more than welcome, and we will contact and have you back in the near, not too distant future.
I'd be happy to. Thank you, Junius. Very nice to meet you. I appreciate your questions and very well done. And I hope to see you again.
All right. Stay well and continue to do the great work that you're doing.
Thank you, my friend. Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, bye.